All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and the host of the program is the inimitable Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And on today's program, we'll be hearing lots of interesting conversation from our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. He's going to be talking with award-winning Washington Post retirement columnist Stan Hinden, and he'll also be talking with Dr. Philip Hagen, the medical editor-in-chief of the Mayo Clinic Guide to Self-Care and the Mayo Clinic Book of Home Remedies. That's coming up this hour. Let's kick it off now with Carol Marks, in conversation with Claire Balding. She's an award-winning broadcaster and writer and the author of My Animals and Other Family, published by Penguin. She was recently named the most fascinating person in Britain.
And congratulations on beating all members of the royal family in January of this year to be named the most fascinating person in Britain.
Thank you. Yes, that was a very strange survey. Bear in mind in that survey that Kate and William, Prince William and Kate's dog finished about sixth. So I think we take that with a pinch of salt. But it's nice to have beaten the dog and everybody else.
Absolutely. So let's start with your roots. You grew up in a horse racing family. Your father, Ian Balding, trained several horses for the Queen. So what was it like to have the Queen show up occasionally for breakfast with your family? And can you tell us about what happened when you inadvertently sent a sausage heading across the table in her direction?
Well, it was always, we were usually told when the Queen was going to visit, my father or my mother or both would take us through the routine, me and my brother, and tell us that we had to say Your Majesty on first greeting, and I was to curtsy and Andrew was to bow, and then it would be ma'am after that, as in spam, not as in mom. You say ma'am, and to make eye contact with the Queen and not to talk unless we were spoken to. But there was a morning in the 1980s, early 1980s, so I was about 12 or 13, when my father had forgotten to tell us that the Queen was coming. So I came running into the house after riding my horse, and I was dressed in my scruffy jodhpurs and, you know, odd socks and a mucky rugby top, and went charging into the house to find two men sitting at the kitchen table. I couldn't understand, but they were the Queen's detectives, or one was the detective and one was the chauffeur. And I thought, oh, everyone must be in the dining room, went crashing through the dining room door, and there was the Queen sitting at the head of the table. And I had rather missed my moment to sort of curtsy, so I just went, oh, great, sausages, and headed for the hot plate, you know, where all the cooked breakfast was laid out. And I was just going through a bit of a stage. A lot of my family are American, and my father was born in America. And there is a thing that I had come across while visiting family that people ate, and I have no idea whether you ever have, Carol, or whether anyone you know does, but they ate sausages on toast with marmalade. And I thought this was fantastically exotic. I thought this was delicious, and this would be original, and this is what I should have. So I was busy trying to cut my sausages long ways. But it's quite difficult to do that. And the trouble is with the sausage, if you do hold on to it too hard, it rather flies out of your hand like a bar of soap. And that's what happened. And unfortunately, it just went shooting straight towards the Queen.
But you were rescued by your brother, I understand.
My brother never rescued me from any situation. He was a horrible boy. No, I absolutely adore him. And he did, yeah, I mean, he was always trying to cover up for me and get me out of trouble. But in that instance, I think even he couldn't save me. I think I was saved, if at all, by the fact that the Queen has a very good sense of humor. And luckily, she thought it was quite funny.
Very good. And what was it like to have the Queen give you your Shetland pony, Valkyrie, as a gift? And what did the pony teach you about getting a horse or a pony or a human to do something for you that you wanted done?
Well, I think it was an interesting sort of coincidence, really, that Prince Andrew and Prince Edward, and Prince Edward would be about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years older than me, probably, maybe a bit more than that, they had learned to ride on this pony called Valkyrie, Shetland pony. And they'd grown out of her, so they were getting onto big ponies, and it just happened that the Queen was looking for a new home for this pony, and my parents had just had their first child, who was me, and so she gave them Valkyrie, and she was my first pony, and I thought she was fantastic, but she was pretty strong in her intent. You know, she did what she wanted to do, And I think the trick with ponies or horses is, as a human being, you have to persuade them to do what you want to do. And you can't force them to do that because you're not strong enough. And you can't lose your patience with them because they're stronger than you and they'll lose their patience back and they won't do anything. So you have to learn the art of diplomacy and also quite a lot about teamwork, because you've got to convince them, and you have to do it without conversation, although I do a lot of talking to animals, actually. But you've got to convince them that this is what would be best for both of us. So it's, you know, it's quite good relationship training as well, I think, in the early stages of life to learn that.
It sure is. Now, when it comes to riding and the Queen's family, amateur races don't usually make the papers, but what happened in the 1989 race you had in which you and Prince Anne raced against each other?
Yes, well, Princess Anne was riding. She'd ridden at the Olympics by then. She'd been at the Montreal Olympics, and she was a very good, capable event rider, but she was just trying out, trying to vary her riding experience and was riding in races. And I just very unfortunately nearly killed her in a race at Beverley, which is a race course in Yorkshire. And I didn't do it intentionally, but it was a very, very bad thing to do. I basically cut her up on the first bend, but then I compounded the error by, in a photo finish with Princess Anne and three other, there were five horses in the photo finish. I think she'd have forgiven me if she'd won the race, but I beat her a short head, and that wasn't very good. So luckily, we've made up. And actually, last night, a big documentary went out on the telly here that I had done for BBC television about the Queen and her passion for horses, in which I interviewed Princess Anne, wearing an extraordinary hat that was given to her in Mongolia, actually, a very strange hat. If it ever comes to telly in America, you must look out for that. And it seems that she is talking to me again, which is a great relief, actually. It's only taken 20 years.
Well, I certainly hope that that documentary comes to America, and I'm sure it will on the BBC. Now, I wanted to ask you, because dogs and horses and racing played such an important role in your life, but you decided after high school to go to university, mm-hmm. and rather than pursue a career in horse riding, what did you major in college?
I read English at Cambridge University.
Now, you've become a very effective leader for women's participation in sports. Mm-hmm. Do you think that freedom to play sports leads directly to women having more freedom? And do we still have a long way to go in regards to equal funding for women's sports and the events associated with them? I know we do in America.
Yeah, you have a very, very good deal in place, which means that in your colleges there has to be equal funding for male and female sports. Now, we don't have that here. And my big concern is that an awful lot of teenage girls are totally obsessed by the way they look. And because society has for a long, long time judged women far too visually, I believe, in my opinion, that women get judged on a different scale to men. They get judged far more on, we get judged far more on what we look like, what we're wearing, what our hair is doing, how much weight, have we lost or gained, and all those things that actually are irrelevant to our performance at work. And I think that's very damaging, and I think it can damage the confidence of women, but also I think it belittles them. And my view is, and maybe because I'm a keen, exponent of sport, but also I have studied the history of sport in this country, it's very closely allied to women fighting for their right to vote. And one of the reasons, and I think this is why it's so important in countries where women still don't have the vote, that they should be allowed to play sport in schools, because I think it starts to open up that channel, that belief that women are allowed to be physically strong, are allowed to be competitive, are allowed to be ambitious. All those things in sport that you have to be, that can be used against women to say, oh, no, that's not feminine. Well, actually, it's part of life, and it's just, there doesn't need to be a feminine and masculine way to behave. You just need to be doing the right thing. And I think that when women started playing sport in schools and as adults, they had to change their clothing because you couldn't run in a corset. And it was very difficult, although some women did play tennis in a corset. It's quite difficult to play tennis in a corset and a full skirt.
I bet.
So you can see how quite quickly freedoms are become more, you press more for freedoms through sport than actually I think anyone imagines might be possible.
You know, beautifully said, and you make good points. Now, you had great success on TV when you broadcast at London's 2012 Olympics, and since then you've been involved in several other broadcasting projects. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, well, the Queen documentary went out last night, and that did very well, got about 4 million viewers. And the night before, I did a big documentary on the Suffragette Derby, because the Derby at Epsom is this Saturday, and it's 100 years since Emily Wilding Davison, who was a suffragette, stepped out into the Derby field and was hit by the King's horse, and she was killed. But her injuries, 4 days later, she died from her injuries. And it was the most public protest at a sports event, and the most famous event probably that's happened in this country at a sporting event ever. And it was very clearly it was very controversial. It still is. But at her funeral, hundreds of thousands of people turned out at her funeral, and then her body was taken up to the north of England, to Northumberland, where she came from, and another hundreds of thousands of people turned out there. So she became a martyr for the cause, and ultimately the suffragettes and their efforts did result in women getting the vote, but not until 1928. So it was quite a long, or that's when they got equal rights. It was quite a long battle, and she was one of those who was prepared to die for it, and did.
That's Claire Balding in conversation with Carol Marks. She's the award-winning broadcaster and writer and author of My Animals and Other Family, published by Penguin. And we could see from that conversation why she was recently named the most fascinating person in Great Britain. More coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and introducing now for the remainder of the program, our senior correspondent Richard Neer, in conversation now with Stan Hinden, award-winning Washington Post retirement columnist and author of a best-selling book, How to Retire Happy, The 12 Most Important Decisions You Must Make Before You Retire, published by McGraw-Hill.
He's written a book called How to Retire Happy, The 12 Most Important Decisions You Must Make Before You Retire. That's a lot of decisions to make, Stan. Let's start with number one. What's the big one?
Well, the first one is a question of whether or not you really want to retire, or whether you're ready to retire, or whether you'd like to keep working.
Now, there's an in-between spot there, isn't there, where you can not work full-time, but can work part-time and do some other things, but not have a 9-to-5, 40-hour-a-week job, right?
Well, you're right, and as a matter of fact, that is becoming very, very common. Many people who retire also work part-time after they retire.
Now, in terms of Social Security, this is one of these decisions that people have to make. Do you take it when you're eligible immediately? Do you wait? There is no one-size-fits-all answer for that, I suppose.
Well, there are a number of options, as you've said. And one of the courses that's recommended these days is that people, if they've got enough money to tide themselves over for a few years, not only continue to work, but put off taking their Social Security benefits, because if you take it early at 62, you get a small check. If you take it at 66, a bigger check. And if you take it at 70, you get the biggest check of all.
Of course, a lot of that depends on how long you're going to live, which unfortunately none of us can predict. I mean, I've heard investment counselors suggest that you take it at 66 because you're going to get it for more years. And if you take it later, even though you're going to get a bigger check, those years from 66 to, let's say, 70, you'll never make up that money.
Well, that's the arithmetic works out that way, of course, and we do not know how long we're going to live, and that's an important factor here. But people do need to think about their options, and that involves learning about Social Security. Many people reach retirement age, as I did, as a matter of fact, without really knowing how Social Security works and what the options are. So that I would recommend that several years before you even think about retire or get toward retirement age, that you sit down with the material from Social Security, learn how the system works, what the options are, and which option is going to fit you best.
Now, a lot of us, of course, are concerned with health care when we age. The costs mount. Medicare, of course, is there. Again, with supplemental insurance, I guess there's no one-size-fits-all answer there, but generally speaking, what do you say about supplemental insurance with Medicare?
Well, from my experience, and I've been on Medicare for a number of years, I would definitely recommend a supplemental insurance policy. As you know, 80% is paid by Medicare, and the 20% that's left over will be paid by your supplemental insurance company. And that can, you know, amount to quite a lot of money after a while. So if you can afford supplemental policy, I would definitely get it because it's definitely important, you know, when you're aging and when your medical bills are likely to go higher.
Now, we know that Alzheimer's is a continuing concern, and long-term care is something that with Alzheimer's you can have that for 10 years and require long-term care, especially if you don't have a spouse or children who can be caretakers, and that can be hugely expensive. What are your suggestions in terms of long-term care insurance?
Well, I think long-term care insurance is great if you need it, and in occasions where you need it, it's wonderful to have. But you're right, it is expensive, and there's a good chance you might pay for years and never use it. So it's a very hard decision. But if you can afford it and you take it at a young enough age, you probably will pay less, and you have a better chance of, you know, keeping that insurance until you might need it.
Final thing is lifestyle choices and where you want to live. Tell me some of the common mistakes people make when choosing a place to reside in retirement.
One of the most common mistakes is that somebody will hear about a place that sounds very attractive and think, well, that would be a great place to retire. But that's not the way to do it. If you think you have a community where you'd like to move to, what you've got to do is find out about that community, what it's like, who lives there, what their attitudes are toward newcomers, what the facilities and the services might be, taxes, etc. You need to really know a place very well before you commit yourself to moving there in retirement. And there are a lot of attractive places. College towns particularly are attracting a lot of people these days because they tend to have a lot of activities, and people often can take free courses, and it's a very, very interesting place to retire to. But even there, make sure you know a lot about the place and, you know, what life will be like if you go there.
Well, in a lot of cases, it makes sense, if you can, to rent for a period of time without making a full-time commitment, actually purchasing a house or a villa or whatever. And if you can rent and live there for a year and you decide you like it, you can always buy then. If you decide you don't like it, you're really not tied down.
Now,
I don't know how many people do it.
That's an excellent suggestion. I would certainly agree with that and recommend it.
And, of course, if you're nearing retirement age, maybe it makes sense to take some vacation time in those areas and spend a couple of weeks at least and get a feel for what it's like to be there more than just for a day or two. Because for a day or two, almost any place is wonderful, but when you spend a few weeks in a place, you really get to know, well, gee, this is boring. There's nothing to do other than the couple of main attractions, right?
I think you're right about that, because if you move to a new town, you're going to have to learn, you know, what the streets and the roads are, what the facilities are, where the stores and the shopping centers are. There's an awful lot to learn that we take for granted on the places we live. And when you move to a brand new place, there's an awful lot to learn over again.
Stan Hinden, author of How to Retire Happy, The 12 Most Important Decisions You Must Make Before You Retire, published by McGraw-Hill. Richard Neer did the interview. Richard will be back in a moment. I'm Michael Harrison. This is A Touch of Gray.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who in just a few minutes is going to be speaking with Dr. Philip Hagen, the medical editor-in-chief of the Mayo Clinic Guide to Self-Care and the Mayo Clinic Book of Home Remedies. That sounds kind of funny, the Mayo Clinic Book of Home Remedies. And he's going to talk about the results of some new survey they did called Wellness for Life, urging listeners to take action now to improve their health care, which can ultimately reduce their overall health care expenses. Now, that's a good reason to stay healthy. It's cheaper. not like you'll live longer, you'll be happier. Take care of yourself. It's cheaper. But, it sounds funny hearing the Mayo Clinic, which you think of as being on the leading edge of scientific medical study, having a book of home remedies, which seems to be on the back edge of medical non-study or non-study.
Except that there's a lot of stuff that, a lot of these sophisticated drugs that, started out as home remedies, herbal things. Where do you think they get these things?
They all grow in the rainforest. And when we destroy the rainforest, we're destroying potential cures for every disease.
That's really true.
Yeah. Yeah. Philosophers and theologians believe that the Creator gave us all the answers to every single dilemma and problem we face in the physical universe around us. We just have to find them.
Why did he put them in the rainforest, though?
Well, the rainforest
as opposed to like in New York City.
Well, maybe some of that schmutz that exists in New York City is healthy. Which is a whole other story.
Someone was schmutz, huh? That some of the stuff that we take now readily as drugs was bacteria. Or some kind of little bacilli or things that you'd look at and you'd go, oh, I don't want that. That's penicillin.
How about probiotics? You know, have this ice cream. It's full of living creatures that will gang up on the other. Gang germ warfare. You know, not germ warfare like the bad kind that weapons of mass destruction would summon up, but the good germs versus the bad germs in your tummy.
And also, there's a lot to be said now for having your body's natural defenses strengthened, your immune system strengthened, and they're even setting the immune system against cancers, where they can strengthen the immune system to a point where it attacks just the bad cells and not the good ones.
Just as long as that immune system doesn't turn on the host, on the person itself.
That's right.
Which is what a lot of these autoimmune diseases are. So if you strengthen that immune system, it can really wreak havoc. There's always downsides to everything. I don't mean to be a, you know, pessimist here. But when you begin to tamper with the human body, you're playing God.
Where you sound like Frankenstein.
That's it always comes down to it, every movie I've ever seen. You have no right, Professor Zumpar, to play God.
They called me mad. They said I was mad. They said my father was mad and my grandfather was mad.
Certain things man should not tamper with.
Right, certain things man should not tamper with. And then, of course, the famous, it's alive! You know what movie that came from?
It's from Frankenstein.
Yes, right, Frankenstein. That was pretty scary stuff. But, no, I mean, you know, it's all chemistry, and a lot of these remedies are, in fact, home chemistry. You know, stuff that's in the house. You did this interview already with Dr. Philip Hagen. Does he have anything in it to offer, or should we go watch YouTube?
Well, so much of it is about preventative medicine, and this is something, you know, when you talk about cost, if you don't get sick in the first place, you don't have to go to the doctor and go for expensive drugs and expensive treatments. So a lot of it is about you know, stuff we talk about on the show all the time, good eating, exercise, good habits that can keep you healthy lest you fall sick to something.
I want to share with you something I have done this week to turn it around at this here in my older years. I'm going to try to reverse a situation that has been building up over the years, and I've been concerned about it. And it finally reached a critical point. I wasn't feeling good last week. So I, you decide when you're really feeling sick. I was dehydrated and had worked way too many hours without rest, so I was a couple of days of rest. I have given up coffee, not completely. I'm only having 3 cups a day, one for breakfast, one after lunch, one after dinner. That's it. I've gone a few days with it. I've had withdrawal. I mean, you really, it's like giving up.
You get headaches when you don't drink.
Exactly. Right. Giving up. And it makes you a little spacey, too, when you give up. Like, I remember when I stopped smoking in the 70s, I was spacey for 3 weeks. I had trouble holding a conversation or writing an article because I'm a writer.
Decades, folks, not 3 weeks.
I heard what you said to the audience behind my back. Mm-hmm. I heard it. But I've been doing good. I have not had my normal 20 cups of coffee. I drink coffee constantly. That's my one big vice. And I've stopped. 3 cups a day, which is,
well,
in my
three
world.
3 cups a day is a lot.
Well, it's not like having any for me.
Yeah.
From 30 cups. I literally would go through a pot a day and then start the second pot.
Boy, you don't need that five-hour energy. You're caffeinated all day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And no more. No more. So we'll see what happens. First of all, you do become dehydrated because caffeine is such a
diuretic.
Diuretic, yeah. We have to break now, so we're going to hear your conversation with Dr. Philip Hagen, and then we will get back together and have a couple of more moments to chat. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent with us. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray, which continues in a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here, as promised, is Richard Neer in conversation with the Mayo Clinic's Dr. Philip Hagen.
Something that I guess is close to all of us in that we think we're healthier than we actually are. There was a recent survey done, Doctor. Tell us about the results in terms of our own estimations of our wellness and what actually is the case.
Thanks for having me, Richard. Yeah, it was a fun and eye-opening survey that we did. We interviewed 1,500 people across the country, representative sample of both men and women in different ages, all these people pre-retirement, and just asked them a little bit about where they were from a health standpoint, what their perceptions of their health in the future were, and their perceptions of their financial capabilities in the future. And what we discovered in that was that we're not where we need to be. For instance, in the survey, only 1 in 10 people really had a realistic understanding of what illness can cost after retirement. So, for instance, it may cost as much as 30% of our spendable income. It's almost like a house payment. Most people were not ready for that.
Now, that includes what Medicare would pay for? That includes that cost, or is that over and above what Medicare would expend?
Right. So that's over and above. Thankfully, we have that health insurance of Medicare for all of us over the age of 65. But there really is a need to cover some of the gaps in Medicare and to know what our out-of-pocket costs may be. And I think that the trigger there is to really talk to a financial specialist so you can know what to expect and how to deal with it.
As a doctor, though, can we ameliorate the expenses by basically taking better care of ourselves now and having a more realistic approach and idea of the health or lack thereof?
Yeah, that's the great news from my standpoint as a preventive medicine specialist is that we really can. So we can avoid that illness by doing some simple things and starting today and then avoid the cost altogether. So I think the call to action for me from this survey was taking that long-term view should get me thinking about what I can do today to avoid costs in the future and be healthier when I hit retirement so I can enjoy it more.
Now, two of the main things, I guess, that scare us all are cancer and heart disease. Tell us what steps we can do before retirement age to help make those situations better if we have control of it.
Right. So, as Americans, those are our two biggest health threats, usually occurring after retirement. And the good news is that simple steps for preventing heart disease include taking a walk. So if you start today and walk 10 more minutes today than you did yesterday, and you continue doing that, that will lower your risk of having a heart attack. And if you eat one more healthy fruit or vegetable per day starting today, that will lower your risk of getting cancer. And so these small steps that people can get started on can make a big difference. You know, another thing that we found in the survey was that one in six people haven't seen their doctor in 2 years. And to me, that's a real missed opportunity, not just to get testing done and make sure that you aren't sick or that you don't have some life-threatening illness, but also to ask your doctor to sit down with you and help you develop a wellness plan that's going to prevent you from getting sick 5, 10, 15 years from now.
And, Doctor, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think under the Affordable Care Act, aren't regular physicals, yearly physicals, covered under that if you're fortunate enough to have insurance?
Right, increasingly so. So the Affordable Care Act does emphasize prevention more, and I think that that's a step in the right direction. In fact, for people who are retirement age, Medicare age, there is already a benefit for a wellness visit. So, again, I think going in and seeing your doctor and saying, hey, doc, today I'd like to concentrate on getting healthier or staying healthy. What can I do? That's already an opportunity for people.
And we've talked about this on the show an awful lot, about just being honest with doctors. I mean, a lot of times it's very hard to admit, well, this is bothering me, that's bothering me. You don't want to sound like you're kvetching about things all the time, but you really should let the doctors know the things that have troubled you in the past, because they could be symptoms of something more serious.
Right, and I would look at that as one aspect of my care is what symptoms do I have, and are they a sign of something bad going on? And then once we've taken that off the table, we've done whatever testing we need to do and gotten reassurance that we aren't ill, then the conversation should continue to say, fantastic, now what can I do to get healthier? And I think that's the conversation that doesn't often happen.
Now, I think one of the things, too, And this is that meld here between the doctors and the insurance people, where, you know, we're talking about supplemental insurance over and above Medicare, and maybe getting an idea. I don't know who you would talk to. Your financial guy would probably want to sell it to you, but in concert with the physician and tell you what they think you will need. I mean, nobody's God and can predict these things, but I would think there would be some sort of middle ground where they can tell you, okay, this is probably a good thing for you on this level, and this is something that might be unnecessary, no?
Yeah, and, you know, as a physician, I know that those financial issues are a major stressor for people. And, of course, I'm not the expert, and I can't help them there, but I do encourage people to find someone who can help them, give them good basic financial advice. And I think that most of the time if you go to a qualified financial expert, they're going to do that. They're going to lay things out pretty fairly for you so that you can start to make some good choices. And more importantly, know what the big issues may be and what your options are for dealing with them. So I'd say encourage people for sure to find someone with good financial qualifications and ask them about that long-term picture.
Dr. Philip Hagen from the Mayo Clinic in conversation with Richard Neer, talking about his new Wellness for Life survey. Richard Neer returns for some final comments in just a moment when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, as we head into the final segment of our big two-hour broadcast. Richard, you follow popular culture, and I understand that this old-time singer, this singer of songs from the old days, Paul McCartney is his name?
McCartney. Oh, 71 years old this week.
An old-timer. Old-fashioned music from the old days, right?
Yeah, the Beatles. I always thought he was the light touch with the Beatles. You know, he was the guy that was kind of frivolous and very talented musically, could play a lot of instruments. John Lennon was the serious one. John Lennon was the core of the Beatles, and McCartney was kind of the little frilly stuff around the edges. What do you think?
Well, I think that the two of them together made for some solid music. I like some of the things they did separately. Like Ringo was the fun lover. He was sort of the everyman. You know, didn't try to be what he wasn't. He didn't try to be a philosopher. He was a pretty good drummer, kind of edgy attitude. George was the spiritualist. He was the thinker. He was the, I don't know, he was the soul and the spirit of the Beatles. He was more the spirit of them. John was the soul. John was the cynic. John was the comedian. John was the sharp-tongued, witty, arrogant rebel. I don't know what Paul was. Paul was sort of the jingle singer. And he occasionally had a strange sound when he would go, you know, when he would like, you know, like in Golden Slumbers, Golden
closely.
I can't do the voice, obviously.
No, obviously.
Thank you. But he occasionally hit notes that were, you just knew it was the Beatles and you knew it was Paul.
Well, he was the cute one, you know. I mean, he was the one that the girls liked to scream at and loved him. But, you know, it's interesting. I've never read an interview with Paul McCartney that I took anything out of. You know, you read of Mick Jagger or Pete Townsend or John Lennon when he was alive. But Paul McCartney has never really struck me as profound.
Yeah, what does he stand for? You know,
well, marijuana. I mean, Paul's a guy that
anybody could do
grass
that. Anybody
and,
can do that.
lives on the, you know, the Scottish farm there, and he has animals and kids and all that, and you know, he's still touring at 71. You got to take your hat off to the guy. He still can make it happen.
I completely respect him, and I totally, you know, obviously, I'm grateful to Paul McCartney and to the Beatles for all that they've done for us and all that they've given us. So let that be the disclaimer. But beyond that, I can't imagine how Paul McCartney and John Lennon ever got along. They must, you know, how familiarity breeds contempt, and especially when you're working with people. Mm-hmm. And when you go between the molecules, you know, of their relationship and you're really in the Beatles, I can't imagine. And they didn't get along, obviously. I don't think they liked each other very much at all at the end, especially. Or maybe
they got back together again. They were friends again. I think sudden fame like that, because they were just this band that played in Germany and little clubs underground and everything. They didn't seem to be anything special. And all of a sudden, within a year, they're worldwide. They're the biggest band ever.
So here's the question. Were they special on a universal level, or were they only special to the place and time in which they lived, which was our lifetime? 200, 300 years from now? It's a rhetorical question. I don't really expect you to answer
it. But you know what? It's 50 years from now. When they first came out, it was 50 years ago, and their music still sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
And kids are getting into it. Yeah. Young kids who never heard it originally are getting into it. So,
yeah, I think there's something universal about the Beatles. I think they're, you know, there with Beethoven and Mozart. And, of course, time will tell, and time is going to be way beyond our lifetime, but I think they'll be around for a very long time. Thank you, Richard. Happy birthday to Paul, and, you know, interesting milestones. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and guiding light of the show. Thank you, Steve Wiseman, and, of course, Richard Neer and Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison. On behalf of all of us, join us next weekend for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.